going direct here. Pittman going through everybody. What a goal this would be! What a goal that is from Brett Pittman! And that is surely the icing on the cake. He picked it up on the halfway line. He ran, and he put it into the net. The Cherries fans go wild. It is 3-0.
Hello and welcome to the latest in the lockdown interviews. Hope you've been enjoying our interviews so far. If you're loving what we're doing, you're welcome to support us by buying us a coffee. Just go to afcbpodcast.com/coffee to show your appreciation. If you can't do that, well, we'd appreciate a review on your podcast app. It's for free. Just hit the review section. And why not give us a few stars? We'd really appreciate it. So who's coming up on today's show? Well, we're joined by Brett Pittman as we discuss his career at AFC Bournemouth. On the pitch, he's been through it all with promotions, relegations, medals and more. And off the pitch, well, the club was a bit tasty too. Brett discusses his time at an evolving Cherries, his other stints at Ipswich and Bristol City, as well as his current spell at Portsmouth. In this interview, it's myself, Sam Davis, Jeff Hayward and Tom Jordan. Enjoy. Brett Pittman, how are you, mate?
I'm good, thank you.
That was a superb goal. I'm sure that we'll talk about many that you scored during the next hour or so. With me, of course, we've got Jeff Hayward as well. Jeff, how are you?
Yeah, really good, Sam. Thanks very much for having me back.
No worries at all. And also, influencer, North Stand, season ticket holder, and general nice guy, Tom Jordan. How are you, Tom?
Yeah, I'm good, Sam. Cheers for that intro. That was very nice of you. Appreciate it.
Yeah, the fiver. Hopefully, it's going to be in the post for me, Tom. So, Brett, you joined Bournemouth at the age of 16 or so, I think, in 2004, following in the footsteps of people like Graham Rousseau, who crossed the channel. I think you scored 4 goals for the Islands under-18 team against AFC Bournemouth, which sort of pricked up the ears of club staff here. And then you joined us playing in the youth team under Eddie Howe. But you quickly made the transition to the first team. Did it feel like a big step up to be playing with grown men so quickly?
Maybe to a point, I think, but in them days there we had the reserve team, and we actually played in the league, so I played quite a lot of games for them. And back then it was, if you weren't playing for the first team, you kind of come down, so people like Neil Young used to play sometimes, and it was great to get experience playing with people like that.
Yeah, good stuff, Jeff.
And you started off on the bench a few times during your first season, didn't you, Brett? But then you suddenly got some more starts. And to Bournemouth fans, I think we all saw your natural goal-scoring talent pretty quickly. You seem to have a lot of hunger for goals as well, which was evident. And there was an infamous incident with Max Gradel about taking a penalty. What was that all about?
Yeah, I think I was probably the one meant to be taking it. Max got the ball, and Max can be quite stubborn when he wants to do something. So we are both young, both had good intentions, and it probably didn't look great at the time. But I think it was both good intentions that worked out badly.
Yeah, do you remember that penalty incident, Tom?
Yeah, I do remember it now. I think it was probably a bit over the top how much it was made of it. But the ball went in the back of the net. That's all that matters. But I did think it was weird at the time because I thought, just assume Brett would take it. And then for some reason, Max just seemed very evident that he wanted it. So, but what if the ball goes in the net, it doesn't matter at the end of the day, does it?
No, that's right. And I mean, Brett, as a striker that's supposed to be taking that penalty and seeing your fellow teammate taking it, obviously you want him to score for the team, but is there an element of it being a bit of a win-win situation for you? I.e. if he scores, great. And if he misses, well, you can sort of say, I told you so.
No, I think you when the decision actually finally gets made, I think you just want him to score. I can't actually even remember who we were playing against that day, but obviously you want him to score and you want to win the game. That's the main thing.
Yeah. On the back of that, Brett, which of your teammates over your career has given you probably the hardest time for being a striker, probably when you're going through a fallow period, but also who's been your greatest supporter, would you say?
There's been a few. I think my greatest support, I think Warren Cummins, when I was coming through as a young lad, he was obviously the main joker in the dressing room, but he kind of took me under his wing to a point, looked after me, and we're still very good friends now. So he probably looked after me the most. James Hayter was another one. He's a man of very few words, but when he did speak to you, you listened, and he helped me also.
Good stuff. Throughout the show, Brett, we're going to be showing some comments from people that are watching live on the screen. So if you see sort of text, you don't have to comment on it or whatever. But it's quite interesting to get the reaction, and loads of people are absolutely loving having you here. So in 2008, I mean, you were, as you were finding your feet playing League One football, you scored goals, I think, in League One initially. So things were going all right for you football-wise. But off the pitch, obviously, the financial situation at the club wasn't the greatest. When you joined, there was the whole sale and lease back of the stadium. And then these kind of financial issues then started to affect what was happening on the pitch in terms of getting that 10-point deduction. And then the following season, minus 17. What's it like to play under such a cloud? I mean, does it provide you with more motivation or anything?
Not so much more motivation. I think I was very young at the time and probably didn't realise the situation, to be honest. With lads older than me would have had families, mortgages to pay. At the time, I was living probably in digs or with one of the other lads, paying them rent, and that was probably my only outgoing. So you quickly just focus on football in that scenario for myself. But obviously the other lads, it was probably much deeper than that and much a bigger problem.
Tom, in terms of playing partners, Brett Pittman, who's the player that you most, remember playing alongside him? Because for me, it's the big one.
Yeah, it's got to be the big man. Like I say, that great escape season, particularly when he come back, I thought, Brett's goals, at the end of the day, without Brett's goals, we wouldn't have stood a chance. But when the big one come back, that partnership they had seemed to just form straight away. And I think what was evident as well when we go on about, kind of a bit more recently when Brett was with the club, I think his roles kind of changed where he was just a natural goal scorer. He's always been a goal scorer, but someone that kind of flex played off him. And then further along, he was ended up playing off Callum Wilson. So shows that, Brett can do a bit of everything when he's up top. But yeah, I would probably say the big one's the one that stands out the most. I think probably it's tough. We've had a lot of good ones. It's probably my favourite ever partnership, I would say, is Brett and the big man, definitely.
And when he did return, what did he bring to the dressing room?
He brought an experience, a leadership. He would take problems on himself and maybe try and deal with them himself. He just bought probably just an overall experience and a bit of a focal point for the lads to bounce off, really.
I can presume there was a fair bit of banter in the change room when he was about, was there?
Yeah, mostly was aimed at him, to be honest. He used to get absolutely tortured by the lads.
I love it, Jeff.
So, Brett, one of the difficult games that you had was the Blyth Spartans game. We've had a couple of questions about that, the red card, and Patrick Sullivan asked whether you thought that meant the end for your AFCB career at the time, and also was interested to know how you turned it around so quickly. What are your recollections of that experience?
Yeah, it wasn't a very good night for myself personally and obviously the team. I just come on. I tried to block the long ball forward, and I caught the lad. Probably was it a red card? I'm not overly sure. And how do you turn it around so quickly? I think Eddie coming in was massive. He come in not long after. I think maybe two games after, and that was huge because under Jimmy Quinn, I probably wouldn't have had any future left at Bournemouth. Along with probably a few other lads, I would have thought.
I'm sure we'll speak sort of more about Eddie. I mean, how did the coach journey feel after that? Because we had a message from Steve the Pirate 65 who said, you know, who asked that, and he said he had to admit that he was a bit worried for you after that one, but you know, he's so glad that you bounced back. Are they sort of long journeys home when you've either lost or sort of done wrong in the game?
Yeah, of course. It was a long journey back, and probably a long few weeks after that, really, because obviously I was suspended, so you can't put it right. And it wasn't nice. I was only young at the time and probably didn't really know how to deal with it that well. But luckily, like I said, it wasn't too far after that Eddie came back. And I just remember jogging around on his first session. He pulled me whilst the lads were jogging and said, "Look, don't worry about what happened at Blyth Barnes. You're going to play for me." And that's it. And that was it. It was, the line was drawn under it, and nothing ever got mentioned about it again.
One of my favourite goals that you scored in the emphatic response was away against Exeter. I think you picked up the ball outside our own penalty box and then beat, what, five players and then beat them all again and then scored. So do you remember much about that goal?
I do. I was lucky to still be on the pitch because I nearly got taken off at half-time because I was that bad in the first half. I think I got you've got 10 minutes to liven up or you're off, which I got quite regularly, to be honest, from Eddie. So luckily I did liven up a little bit. I think Danny scored the equaliser, and then obviously I scored that goal, which had a little bit of luck and a little bit of everything, really, and then managed to score a second late on in the game to win 3-1.
Tom, do you remember that goal?
Yeah, big time. It was a massive goal, wasn't it? I mean, I think that goal was another example of, obviously we're going to talk about plenty of great goals. The amount, I've never been in a crowd so much where I thought, "Brett, pass it. Brett, don't shoot." And then it goes in. The amount of time, I've never had it with a certain player before where just you think, he can't keep going. You've got to let it off. And it was absolutely brilliant. It was, if you put that one next to the Fulham one, which I'm sure we'll talk about, so many similarities to it. It's brilliant. To be able to do it twice, it's fantastic.
Well, that's what I want to go on to talk about, because you did a video with like AFCB TV or whatever it was called at the time, Cherries Player, where you're on the pitch in the like five different, you know, positions. You had a cone down where you hit, you know, struck the ball from. I think one of your strikes was Shrewsbury away, which I've got to thank you for, because I put a £1 bet on you scoring first and Bournemouth winning 3-0. And that got me like 96 quid. So I was well happy with that. Thank you, Brett. #, thank you, Brett. Yeah. But yeah, that was a cracking goal. But also, you know, that strike at home, as we just said, saying off air, Burton Albion, 86th minute, you were way out. And it was audacious. I mean, can you talk us through that? I mean, obviously you must have seen that there was a slight chance with the keeper off his line, but I mean, you hit it well.
I'll be honest, that I had the hump because I'd been put out onto the left wing.
Yeah, that's right.
So I thought the ball just sat there and I just thought, I'm just going to hit this as hard as I could. And luckily it went towards the goal. It could have gone anywhere. But yeah, that was the reason I shot from there, because I wasn't particularly happy that I'd been pushed out onto the left wing when we needed a goal, I think, at the time.
What gives you greatest pleasure, Brett? Beating 10 players and scoring, or a 35-yarder in the top corner?
Anything that goes in the net, whether it's from 2 yards or 22 yards, it doesn't really matter. A goal's a goal.
Would you say you're quite, I wouldn't say selfish, but would you say you're single-minded when it comes to scoring goals?
Yes, I think so. I think you have to be. I think,
yeah,
if you're happy to run through and pass it when you could score. And I mean, I've played with forwards and played with a lot of forwards, and currently playing with forwards at the time at now, that I read them saying in papers and stuff, "Oh, I'm not bothered about scoring goals." Well, that's what you're paid to do. If I was paid to run around like a marathon runner, then I wouldn't be playing up front. You're paid to score goals as a forward, in my opinion. And if you're not scoring goals, you're not particularly doing your job. But of course, you can do other things and other aspects of the game to keep you in. But ultimately, you're going to be judged on scoring goals as a forward. You have to be.
Yeah.
Would you say, Brett, I'm following on from that, would you say, for example, if you felt like you had a really good game and we won 2-0, something like that, but you didn't get on the score sheet, would you find the game kind of more pleasing if you didn't have the best of games, but you nicked a goal at the end? Would you find that, because like you were saying, you feel like that's your job, would you feel like you were always more pleased after a game if you nicked a goal, regardless of your kind of individual performance?
I think, if I'm honest, it depends on the situation of the season. If it's late in the season and you've got nothing to play for, nicking a goal is perfect. But I was always really big on, long as I played well enough to keep my place for the week after, then there's another opportunity to score. So that was always what I aimed to do, whether I played well to keep my place for the next week or the next game. And obviously, if you don't play well, but you nick a goal, then more than likely you're going to keep your place as well. So both really. It was either or, to be honest.
We spoke to Marvin Bartley, and he said that your desire to win was so strong that when we didn't, he considered you to be a grumpy guts, and that was his words. Do you want to sort of elaborate on your feelings when you feel as though your team sort of hasn't performed, or is it you know, down to your individual performance that you sort of, you know, that you go home thinking about, and how long does it take you to get over that?
No, I think it's a team thing more than an individual thing. If you haven't played well, you know yourself. But as a team, if we haven't done what we were meant to do, or we haven't played well and we've got beat, then I think it's only right to ask questions in the changing room after the game. I think that's right. And then it gets put to bed in the changing room, and then you get back on the bus or back in your car and you go home. And obviously you think about the result, but when you come back in Monday morning, you don't dwell on it and you move on to the next game.
Jeff, what do you remember about that Burton Albion match that clinched promotion, because there were thousands that ran onto the pitch and they were great hosts, weren't they?
I mean, I think I read somewhere, Brett, that is your favourite ever game, isn't it? Is that still the case? Because that must have been an amazing experience to play in that promotion winning game.
It's certainly up there, yeah. I think that one, obviously the Carlisle one at home, and the Bolton one for different reasons. Obviously, I didn't play a full part in the Bolton one. I come on with 20 minutes to go, but still, for what we achieved over that season, it's difficult to pick. I think also the Chester one away was big, because I think that was really the result that sealed us staying up, not the one at home the week after.
Mm. Yeah, the Burton match, I particularly remember. I was so you know, fond of it, and you saw just what potential that we had got. Tom, like, were you there during that day? Because it was beautiful weather, wasn't it? You know, not a cloud in the sky, and just perfect performance. And they were really good hosts. Everyone ran onto the pitch chanting, you know, Kesara, Sara, whatever will be. We go to St Mary's and all that, which I look back at a bit cringeworthy now that we're actually playing them regularly. But what were your thoughts of that day?
Yeah, it was a great one. That kind of, like you say, it feels like kind of the original, if you like. We've obviously, like Brett said, we've had obviously the Carlisle game and Bolton, you know, different promotions since. But that felt like the start of something. Obviously, we'd survived the season before, and it felt like these group of players, and with Eddie back, that we could really achieve something. And so it felt more than just a promotion to me. It felt like, you know, we were really starting to build something. And that was, I'm quite, I get quite nervous for a big game. I can just remember, you know, feeling like we'd have no problem. That side in League Two, I just felt we were too good. We were too good to be in that league, and we were always going to win. And like you say, Burton were great hosts, and we kind of have always had a bit of a soft spot for them since, letting us on the pitch and that. And that was a nice touch from them, definitely.
It seemed to be that season that got you noticed a lot, Brett, because the 2010-2011 season, back in League One at that point in time, Eddie Mitchell was chairman. And before the season had started in August, it was reported by Sky Sports News that newly promoted Premier League side Blackpool had made a bid of £400,000, possibly rising to £600,000 to sign you. But it seems initially Mitchell blocked the news, but then it was announced that it had been accepted, but eventually the move broke down. Can you sort of tell us a bit more about what happened with that?
Yeah, I had a medical, I passed the medical. Me and my agent walked. I was already having doubts on, to be honest, driving. I'd flown to Manchester, been picked up, and when I was driving down the seafront in Blackpool to have my medical, I was already having doubts, thinking, I'm not really sure this is for me.
Mm.
This is a long way away from what I know, a long way away from my now wife's family. The area doesn't look very nice. I'm not entirely sure.
I don't think we've got any Blackpool fans listening, so you can say what you like, Brett.
Say what you want.
I laid on the medical table, past the medical. Me and my agent walked into Carl Oyston's office. And as a new signing, you expect to be welcomed, or somebody that's going to sign, to be welcomed and made to feel welcome. He didn't even look up off his chair, didn't get up off his chair, didn't look up from his computer screen. And at that point, I just knew it wasn't for me. We spoke briefly outside. My agent said to them, can you order us a taxi? And then I went back to Manchester because the lads, we were playing Tranmere on the Saturday, and that I think this was the Thursday or the Friday, so I was fully prepared just to drive or get the train to Manchester from Manchester to Tranmere to play for Bournemouth on the Saturday. And then it transpired, I didn't know anything about it, that Bristol City come in the meantime.
And Robbie Savage said something, didn't he, Jeff?
Yeah, I think you got roundly slated for passing up the opportunity. Robbie was one of those people who had a go at you. But any regrets about turning that move down? Because that would have been a Premier League club at the time, and Bristol City obviously weren't. So what were your feelings about the sort of different clubs?
No regrets whatsoever, to be honest. It wasn't the club for me. I was more than happy to come back to Bournemouth and play for Bournemouth. I was happy there. We had a good team. I was enjoying myself. And it just didn't feel right. I didn't get a good feeling about it whatsoever. So it wasn't for me, and absolutely no regret.
Good stuff. Well, I hope that answers a few questions there, and also Kersika on the Vitals forum as well. No regrets. And it seems to me, Brett, that your footballing moves are dictated purely on lifestyle, but footballing reasons, rather than, you know, there are players that move for money. And let's be fair, there are choices that you could have made that could have lined your pockets a lot better. And it seems that that's more of a drive for you rather than the cash in the bank.
Yeah, I think so. I think I've never really been driven by money. Obviously, everybody wants to earn as much money doing whatever they can do. But I think there's more to it. I think being happy in the area, the right team, the right environment. And a big thing for me now, obviously, having two children and a wife was for them to be happy.
Yeah. Now, before we talk about Bristol City, I just got a question here that's come through from Keith Brewer, who you may know, Brett. He said, Brett, can you remember playing cricket as a team building exercise with Eddie at Broadstone Cricket Club? You picked up an old bat out of the pavilion and smashed a six with it. Can you remember that?
I can. That was a good evening. I do enjoy cricket. I played a lot when I was younger, so... it wasn't my first time, unlike some of the other lads.
Love it. So, yeah, Bristol City then, Jeff.
Yeah, I was going to say, it must have been different to go to a club like Bristol City, who had expectations to play at a high level. And, I mean, the same can be said for Ipswich and Portsmouth, compared to where Bournemouth were at the time, where we were a club that were happy to survive at the time where you were playing with them, let alone get to the Premier League. I mean, what's it like playing for different size clubs with those levels of expectation?
I've never really thought of it like that, to be honest. I really enjoyed my time at Bristol. It's a great club with really good people there. The city is a lovely city, and I did really enjoy my time there. We probably didn't do as well as what we would have liked to in my time there. But we was in the Championship. It's a tough old league to get out of, and we give a good account of ourselves in the couple of seasons I was there, but we're really nowhere near being good enough to go anywhere near the promotion picture.
Tom, would it be fair to say that Brett is one of the players that established himself as a hero quite early on? So when certain players move, you always sort of tend to follow their career and see how they're doing now. Was he one that you sort of always would glance at the Bristol City result and see if Brett's on the score sheet, etc.?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I think Brett kind of, I think coming through as such a young lad, like we mentioned, I think everyone had that kind of, yeah, that fans' favourite feel, that soft spot. I remember, like I alluded to there, when we got promoted against Burton, and I felt like we were building something. I felt that when Brett went, that was a real hit. I remember being absolutely gutted. Just, I remember, when we, like you say, when the Blackpool one didn't go through, and you're thinking, oh yeah, we've got away with that. It was, it felt like we missed a massive piece of the jigsaw when Brett went. But equally, you felt like Brett deserved that opportunity. The goals, you know, the games and goals ratio was just incredible, and thoroughly deserved a move to Bristol City. And I always knew he'd carry that on there. Just, I've always felt, everyone I spoke to is, you know, whatever team Brett's with, you just always feel like he'll score goals, and that's always been the case. So but yeah, definitely. I've always had a bit of a soft spot for Bristol City ever since, really. I think, like you say, when Brett was there, you check it out and you kind of carry it on a little bit. And they're a club that would be quite nice to see if they could pop up to the Premier League at some point.
I wouldn't put him in the sort of category of sleeping giant, but it's a huge, like, city, you know, bustling, and, you know, they are getting towards that stage where, like, they, you know, that city does, you know, deserve Premier League football. Yeah. Jeff?
Yeah, and I'd agree. I always looked out for you on the score sheet at Bristol City, Brett, partly because I thought you were always good enough to play at that sort of higher level, and it was really pleasing to see you do so well there. Obviously, then thrilled to pieces when he came back, and it sort of, you know, that made us, I think, both Tom and Sam and every Bournemouth fan was thinking, this is going to go even better for us.
That's right. So how did that come about then, Brett?
To be honest, I've been trying to get back for a few weeks, a few months before, really, before Eddie came back. And I think when he did come back, I think that kind of sealed it. It was just when we could do it and could everything be agreed with Bristol City, etc., because I was still in contract. And luckily, I went and seen the Bristol City manager in the end. I wasn't playing. I was on the bench, but I wasn't really playing. I said, look, please just let me go back. I want to go back. I won't kick up a fuss, but it's something that I'd like to do for me and my family. I'd like to go back to a club that I've had success at and enjoyed. And he was good enough, and I think within a day or two, I was driving back down to Bournemouth, and I do honestly remember driving back and never being so happy. I was delighted to drive back.
It's Tom, we've had a single factor that lots of people seem to mention about the reasons why they joined the club and why they love the club, and that's a certain person who's managing the club. Tommy Elphick said the same thing, didn't he? He seems to be a big factor in a lot of players' decisions.
Yeah, definitely. You can see why as well, you know, because he just seems to get the best out of players. You can see I think there's quite, you know, you don't want to go into, you can name so many individuals, but you think of, you know, Simon Francis, Harry Arter, a few players that you thought they're good players. Then Eddie takes over and suddenly, you know, they probably wouldn't have even believed they could have gone to the level they had. And I think that's clearly, I'm sure Brett will agree, that Eddie just seems to get the best out of players. I remember, I think it's quite nice thinking when Eddie first joined, one of the first things he done was bring Fletch back. And then when he come back a second time, he brings Brett back. And like I said, two of our greatest ever strikers. And it's it just shows that Eddie's got that kind of power to bring back. Brett, do you think if Eddie wasn't in charge, would it have been as appealing, or was it, I just want to go back to Bournemouth, or was it with Eddie there as well, we can really achieve something as well? Was it kind of a double whammy, really, with Eddie being back?
It was definitely attractive before, but when he came back, it was like, it's got to happen. That was the main thing. I had to make it happen, and luckily it did.
How has his management and coaching style changed in your years away?
His management, in terms of man management, probably hasn't changed a great deal. His coaching obviously moved on with time. His time at Burnley, obviously, when he first took over, we had 12, 13, 14 players. And when we obviously went up to the Championship, we had a squad of 25. the sessions evolved massively. His philosophy on how he wanted to play evolved massively. But one thing that never changed with was his work ethic and his demand for everybody to work as hard as they possibly can day in, day out, which I think come and showed every Saturday. I think we used to outrun teams pretty much every week. But that wasn't coincidence. That was a culmination of hard work throughout the week, throughout the season. And that's the one thing he always used to say to me especially, I don't care what you do, just work as hard as you can, because if you work as hard as you can, I know you're going to score. And that was his big thing with me personally.
How did you find kind of training with Eddie, Brett? Just because when we spoke to a few other kind of ex-players, I remember Tommy Elphick saying that since he's left, he says to kind of the players that are still at the club, you don't realise how good the kind of training is with Eddie. Is that, without, you know, kind of digging out any other clubs, how different is training with Eddie, and how Tommy was saying particularly how much more enjoyable it is and how kind of meticulous he is with training? Is that something you'd agree with?
Yeah, without a doubt. They don't know how lucky they are. people from the outside just would think what he does is a given, and it's far from it, trust me. His training, like you said, how methodical he is, his demand for people to work hard, how he plans his sessions, how he wants everybody to improve, whether you're in the team, out of the team, young, old. He just wants everybody to improve every day. And that, weirdly, a lot of managers don't do, which I find very strange.
With 19 goals in that 26 games that you played in that season, we got promotion straight away. Did you have a feeling that you were at your peak in that season, or do you think you were even better in the Championship?
I don't think I was far off. I think probably the second season in the Championship, the season we went up, was probably when I was at my best, my fittest. I think that first season in the Championship, I hurt my hamstring against Real Madrid, and it kind of wasn't a bad injury, but it took me a while to get back properly fit. And by the time I was back fit, the team was established, and I struggled really to get back in the team, and then really struggled to get my head around going from the main man scoring every week to not playing. I struggled badly, I think, looking back, without really realising it at the time. And that summer was a big make or break for me, really. I went away, I worked really, really hard to get as fit as I could, and came back, had to wait for my chance, and just luckily for me, and obviously unluckily for Jan, he got sent off at Bolton, and I got my chance, and then kind of scored a couple of goals against Reading, then scored in our 8-0 win at Birmingham, and then it was kind of me or Jan, instead of it was Jan to start with and I would be behind him. It kind of evolved into it, either of us could play depending on which game and what the scenario was.
Did you find the whole rotation thing with Jan quite frustrating as a person that's got such hunger in the game?
No, not really, to be honest, because I can accept playing if I'm not playing, because the person who is playing in my position is as good or better than me, and Jan was certainly a very good player. So no, not in that instance. But if someone was playing in front of me who I thought wasn't as good or didn't do what I did or couldn't score the goals I could score, then yeah, I would have been frustrated. But Jan was different because he was so good.
Tom, obviously in the Championship, one season was with Lewis Graben, and then Callum Wilson with the next one. How did you feel during that first season? I mean, I've asked you this before, but for the benefit of anyone new that's watching, that first Premier Championship season, we held our own pretty well, didn't we? Finishing 10th.
Yeah, 10th was amazing. I mean, I did genuinely believe we wouldn't be in any sort of relegation scrap. I always felt we were too good for that, but I think every Bournemouth fan would have taken 10th. And I remember actually with Brett mentioned it there. I remember that first championship game. I think it was against Charlton. I think you had Kerbigan actually scored for Charlton. But I remember being everyone beforehand, kind of being in the pub beforehand and going, oh, Brett's out. We haven't got, I think we had Wes Thomas and Graben, I think, started that game. But I think I remember it being really, really key that we couldn't believe we had lost Brett for that first game. And yeah, I remember now it was, like you say, the Real Madrid game. But what I was going to ask Brett was, when we were talking about kind of the change in seasons and your form, did Eddie change your role, so to speak? Because I felt like you'd gone from kind of, and I suppose people talk about it as like the number nine, kind of the one to put to kind of playing a little bit number 10 role-ish because of Graben or because of Wilson. You almost had to adapt. Did you find that quite easy to just adapt to your game slightly?
Yeah, I think from certainly from the League Two season with when I played up front with Fletch, it was kind of a partnership. It was more Fletch is obviously going to be right up because he can't run around as much because of his age and et cetera, and it was almost for me just to play off him and play where I wanted really around him. And then when I came back in League One and then the Championship, we definitely evolved into more of a nine and a 10. And yeah, I was certainly seen as a number 10. I think Eddie wanted somebody quick to stretch teams as the number nine. So that probably wasn't really my strength. So number 10, I obviously would like to think I could play football and handle the ball. So playing number 10, it changed my role maybe to a little bit, but not overly really.
What was the biggest difference playing with Callum as opposed to playing with Lewis Graben up front?
There wasn't a whole lot of difference, to be honest. They both did similar things, like to run in behind. Callum was maybe a little bit stronger, could hold the ball up slightly better. But they both had great attributes, both quick, could run in behind, both could score goals. And they were both good to play up front with. I think when I came back in League One, I really enjoyed playing up front with Grabs. He was really good for me.
Do you remember, this is a question that's been submitted from Ian. Do you remember the Andrew Sermon goal at Sheffield Wednesday where he lashed the ball after it rebounded? You got a smile on your face like we do. And we've actually got a video that's from AFCB TV. Just to remind people of that Andrew Sermon goal, but also the unfortunate rebound incident with Brett straight afterwards. Take a look at this.
Wilson gets back on his feet. It was Maguire who was guilty. Wilson's got space now. Edge of the area. Chance maybe for Sermon, who places it. And Andrew Sermon breaks the deadlock. What a counter-attack from the Cherries. Wilson, to his credit, was fouled and then got back up on his feet. Kept running. Found Sermon. And he delicately bent one past Kieran Westwood. And after 20 minutes of the second half, the Cherries have edged their noses in front. Sheffield Wednesday nil. Bournemouth 1. The ball is with...
So yeah, that looked a little bit painful. But do you remember that moment?
I do. Yeah, I think I was trying to kick it into the crowd just to waste a bit of time, and obviously didn't get it into the crowd. Yeah, it was painful.
So standout goal from yourself, Championship season, probably. Tom, would you say it'd be Fulham away?
Fulham straight away. Fulham comes to mind.
Oh my God! What a goal!
Yeah, it was crazy. But it's probably. I mean, there's a lot of good goals. Obviously, we were talking to Matt Ritchie not long ago, and you know, we're talking about some of the goals he managed to score. But I think, obviously, to do with that night as well, it was a Friday night game. That's probably, I'd say, one of my favourite ever goals to see live, because it was just, you just thought, oh, yeah, go on, Brett, yeah, go on, let off, Brett, stop, and he just kept going, and it was just incredible. But like we said earlier, you've got. In that Championship season, I think because of how good that goal was, you forget. I remember there was a nice one against Blackpool. There was a few good goals in there, but I think it just shows how good that Fulham one was, that everyone just says Fulham straight away, because there were some other good goals in there. Was that your favourite, Brett, in that season?
Yeah, I think so. I think, I think, like you say, I think the whole thing, the Friday night under lights just on TV makes it feel slightly better than what it was. I really did enjoy that goal, and more than anything, it put us 3-0 up, and we was always going to going to win that game in the end once we went 3-0 up.
I always feel sorry for Steve Cook because he scored a worldie that game. And people kind of, I bet he thinks, I wish I scored that in another game because everyone remembers Brett's goal. But, you know, Cookie scored a worldie as well.
What about that hat trick?
Great goal.
What about that hat trick you scored, Brett, against Blackpool? Because that was a right foot, left foot header, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was, yeah. I don't know how the third one went in. The keeper lost his arms, I think. But, obviously it's nice. It's nice to score a hat trick. I think I've had 3-4 maybe in my career. It's not something that happens very often. So when they do come around, it is very nice.
It seems to be that I think I remember seeing an interview with Eddie Howe afterwards, and he said that he was encouraging you in training, you know, to run with the ball, and you did that with that Fulham goal. And then, on the following Saturday, like 8 days later, you did exactly the same. But, you know, that was your left foot finish against Blackpool. And that was, absolutely superb hat trick, all in the first half as well. I was in the Ted McDougall for that as well. So that was really good. And, as you may have seen, flash on screen, Steve Waldridge got in touch to say, did Messi write to you and ask for your shirt after that? But if you were to compare the Exeter and Fulham goals, HBA1 got in touch and said they were vital goals. But what was your favourite one out of those two, if you had to weigh them up? Tricky.
Oh, I don't know. It's tough. I think... if you take the leagues out and the opposition out of them, I would probably say the Exeter one just. But if you factor in the leagues and the opposition, then the Fulham one. So it's tough.
Hmm. I'd say all these amazing goals have stopped us to remember. I think it was Eddie's first game back against the game against Tranmere when they were top of the league. Hmm. And was it the Tranmere game where it was that free kick where you smashed it from... Wickham, yeah, that's it.
Yes.
Where they were top of the league at the time. And I think we'd gone 1-0 down, I think, and we won 3-1 or something. And that was kind of a real statement to the league that, you know, despite everything, we could get it with the big boys. That goal was just, there was another moment where I thought, he's not going to hit that. And you said earlier about kind of having the hump sometimes and things like that. A few of your goals from far out did kind of feel like you were just taking anger out on the ball. And it felt like you were going to cross it the whole time. And at the last minute you went, you know what, and just ran up and smashed it at the top corner. That was one of my favourites, actually, thinking about it as well.
Yeah, that one, I think before the free kick, someone had been injured and it took ages and ages for the game to restart. And I don't think I was thinking about shooting, really, because at that time I was taking corners and free kicks anyway, so... I think I may have even said to someone, it's a bit far to shoot this. And in the end, I've decided just to shoot. And luckily, I've caught it really nicely and it's flown in the top corner. So, yeah, it wasn't the plan all along, to be honest.
I think that's what marks you out, Brett, as a natural goal scorer. You know, you've got the confidence. And a lot of players wouldn't even... dream of hitting it, but you just have this amazing self-belief, it seems to me, that you think you can score from anywhere.
Yeah, I've never been, the one thing I've never been bothered about is missing. The thing that bothered me is if I wasn't getting chances, that used to annoy me or upset me. Missing, I could miss 5-6 chances in a game. If I was getting chances, then I was happy because I know I'd score eventually. That was my mindset, really, to be honest.
Yeah, and you scored some absolute superb, but, you know, pivotal goals as well. Talk to us about the way the Championship season concluded, because we were playing on the Monday night against Bolton, and it was Middlesbrough against Fulham, and then Fulham pulled a 4-3 result out of the bag, which meant that we could get promoted. Oh, well, effectively, on the Monday. What's the build-up like to that match against Bolton at home?
I actually got asked this the other day. I don't really remember much about the build-up. I remember watching the result of Fulham-Middlesbrough. I was at Poole Town watching them, weirdly. Because obviously we didn't play on the Saturday, so I went to watch them. But no, I don't really remember anything about the build-up, to be honest. And I don't really remember anything about the game, bar the goals. I didn't even remember Jan had missed a penalty until someone said the other day.
Yeah, well, it was replayed on ACB TV, and you know, you came on as a substitute, and I could sense your frustration, and this is where the selfish side comes out as a. But I say selfish. You also just want the best person in the best place to score, and there was a chance I think that Callum Wilson had where he just skimmed the crossbar in the second half. It would have made it 4-0, and he should have played the ball square to you, and you were absolutely livid. I mean, by that time, promotion was in the bag, 3-0 up, you know, 10 minutes to go, but you went off at him, and, you know, rightly so. But it just shows how much it means to you, doesn't it?
Yeah, I think you should always try, and just because it's 3-0, it doesn't mean you can start making decisions and being selfish. I think if someone's in a better position than you, then you should pass it. And I obviously at that point thought he should have passed it.
That's right.
Did you ever get that back from players, Brett, when you didn't pass and miss? Did they ever give you a full volume?
Yeah.
Bit of abuse.
Quite a lot. Quite absolutely. A lot, yeah. It's part of the game. You take it, you give it, you move on. You argue in the changing room, you move on, your teammate. So I think everyone really just does it because they want to succeed. So I've definitely played in teams where there isn't as much as what we had of that in that team, and the team is less for it, definitely.
So promotion from League Two to League One, and then League One to the Championship, and then the Championship to the Premier League. Craig asked, what do you personally feel was the biggest achievement in those sides? Would it be the Premier League just because it's the highest point of football, or maybe the adversity of other seasons maybe makes them more special for you?
Yeah, it's tough to say. Obviously, getting promoted to the Premier League, the Championship is notoriously such a tough league to get out of. And there were some good teams up there that season, so we did really well to get promoted. The League One season, they were miles off it when Eddie took over, and before I came back, they were miles adrift of the promotion places. Mm. So that's a massive achievement. And the adversity in League Two, having such little numbers. They're all special in themselves. It's difficult to decide which one's better than the other, really.
Yeah, I mean, what goes through your head when you're on the promotion bus and there's like 55,000-60,000 people waiting there for you at the beach? Does that make you think, God, this club's got some kind of potential?
I remember turning around the corner at Boscombe and thinking, wow, this is ridiculous. Having been on the one from League One and League Two, where there was quite a few people, but nothing of that magnitude, I thought, you just think, wow, this is crazy. And obviously, the whole buzz of the club going to the Premier League excited people. And I think the football we are playing in the Championship had to excite people, because I know it was really exciting to play in.
Would it be fair to say that you remember more about that day than someone like Jan Kermigan, who seemed to be on the champers from a very early stage?
Yeah, I would definitely say so. I think he was in a good place, but a place that he probably doesn't remember too much.
That's a media trained answer. He was in a good place. I like that. That's superb. Jeff, and then obviously Brett sadly departed.
Yeah, I think Eddie said that he'd spent a long time working with you and it was always going to be tough. But when he called you into his office and told you that he'd be happy for you to remain as a squad player but couldn't promise you game time, I mean, that must have felt difficult for you, I guess. What were your feelings? Because it must have been football meant more to you than necessarily the glamour of being part of a Premier League squad.
Yeah, I think he came to my house and we spoke for a long time, and it was obviously a tough decision to decide to leave, and in hindsight, probably wish I didn't. Wish I would have given it year, another season, and just seeing what happened. But I made the decision for the security of my family, to be honest. Bournemouth couldn't offer me a new contract at the time. Ipswich were offering me 3 years, and that's that. They just finished in the playoffs the season before. That was really, really why I went. The decision happened quickly, probably more quickly looking back than what I should have let it happen. To be honest, I should have sat on it and waited for a few days or even a week. But it happened, and that was that. I probably wish it didn't happen. In all honesty, nothing against Ipswich, because I really enjoyed my time there, but I probably should have given it another season and seen what happened in Bournemouth.
And that probably answers the questions that we had submitted from Paul Kenward. Paul, thank you for that, and thanks for your contribution yesterday as well. Danny Beale as well, who said he was very gutted to not have seen you play in the Championship. Also, Phil McGuinness as well. Also, thank you very much for Jake for your question as well, which I feel Brett has answered. And Tom, you're convinced that had Brett played in the Premier League for us, he would have notched, and probably notched a few.
Yeah, no, definitely, just because Brett's scored goals wherever he's been. It's one of the... There's kind of two... Eddie could do no wrong in my eyes, or many Bournemouth fans. There's kind of two things, I would say, that Fletch never got to play in the Championship and that Brett never got to play in the Premier League. They're things that I just thought, I wish they could have got that opportunity. I totally... You know, it's nice to hear kind of the reason in there from Brett, rather than being a squad player and, you know, like you say, the security for your family and things like that. It makes total sense. I mean, you never know what's going to happen. And obviously, we ended up going to the Prem and we got quite a few injuries. And so you're never going to know that. But at the end of the day, I think it's pretty obvious with the injuries we got, Brett would have probably got quite a lot of football because we were trying different players out in different positions a lot of the time and had to change things, like you say, because of injuries. And I think Brett would have got more minutes than maybe Eddie or himself potentially expected, which is one of them things. But I'm convinced, and I know Brett's self-belief, but I'm convinced that he would have scored goals, definitely.
I think I'd have loved to have seen your fearlessness going up to a ball 35 yards out against Manchester City and smacking it in the top corner to shut them up. That would have been brilliant.
Just imagine, that would have been superb. So summing up your time at AFC Bournemouth then, we'll briefly then go on to talk about what happened after that. Ipswich, of course, Portsmouth. We had a question that was sent in from David Cordell, who asked, what would you say, based on your time at AFC Bournemouth, were Eddie Howe's strengths and his weaknesses as a manager?
His main strength, without a doubt, is the will and the hunger to improve everybody as a player. Like I said earlier, no matter how old you are, whether you're in the team or out the team, he would ring me on a Tuesday night if we've got a Wednesday off, and he would say, oh, do you want to come in tomorrow and do some finishing? I'll get a goalkeeper. And obviously I would always go in, and he would be there. He'd make sure every single member of his staff was there and the goalkeeper, and he'd put on a one-on-one session just for me, to improve me, to get better. And there, you would think people would maybe think that's normal, and it really, really isn't. I've never seen any other managers do it. I've never heard of any other managers doing it. I'm sure there may be a couple, but I've never seen or heard of it. And he wasn't doing it because he thought he had to do it. He was doing it because he wanted to do it. He wanted to make players better, because in turn that would make his team better. That's his biggest strength, I would say.
And in terms, yeah, that's right. Well,
sure he's got one.
Yeah, you would say that. Some people have said that sometimes he can be maybe a bit too loyal or a bit too, you know, not very flexible, and, you know, going with the players that he's tried and trusted for so long. Would that be something that you agree with?
No, I think. As a manager, I can imagine it takes a lot for you to fully trust a player, and when you get there, you know what he can hopefully recreate week in, week out. I think it's natural to be loyal to him. look, if he thought there was someone else in the building or whoever it was better for the job, then he would play them. He's not playing them just because they've been there a long time. Yeah. He can be really, really ruthless. But he will just pick his best team for whichever game and pick his best system for what he thinks is the best way to get a result for the football club, not because he wants to keep X, Y or Z happy because they've been there a long time. He's not that naive.
We had a question in from Super Ali Santos, who said, are you gutted to have finished your AFCB career with fewer goals than Steve Fletcher? And was there ever any rivalry between the lads in that respect?
No, there was no rivalry, but I'd like to think if I played 800 games, I'd have had more goals.
Oh, I love that. Love that answer.
Top answer.
Out of your first and second spells, just in a word, first or second, which one did you prefer with the Cherries? On the spot.
I don't know. Both. I loved all of it, to be honest. I had tough times at the... dropped my phone.
No worries.
I've had tough times. I had tough times at the start of the my first spell, like we spoke about, Blythe Spartans, etc. But I think the tough times make the good times better. And in that squad, I've got mates and made mates that I've got. Coops and Woz were both... They were both my best men at my wedding. So that shows the kind of... we still go on holiday with Danny and Darren, Warren and Sean, Alan, Connell. We're still really good mates. And
oh, nice.
That's my circle of friends now. So that was a special time. And then obviously the what we achieved in the second spell, and I'm still good friends with a lot of them, Charlie, Simon, and our wives and our kids are friends as well. So I really couldn't pick, to be honest. They were both great times.
Moving on to Ipswich, Brett, from Eddie Howe to Mick McCarthy. I mean, he's got to be the grumpiest manager anybody's ever played for, isn't he?
Do you know what? He's got an unbelievable sense of humour, which you'd be really surprised about, but he was a really funny bloke. He was a really good bloke, a top bloke, to be honest.
Oh, good.
And I did enjoy playing for him, but going from Eddie to him, the tactics and the training was just chalk and cheese, and it's hard to get your head around, to be honest.
Yeah, one of my friends is an Ipswich fan. His name's Leaf, and it's quite interesting to see what he said about it. And this is what he texted me earlier. He said, Brett was technically so good, but he was never really used correctly by Mick, in my opinion, as he preferred it lumped up to Murphy. So it seems that we never really played to his strengths. Does that sound about right?
Yeah, possibly. Yeah, I think we had some good footballers at Ipswich. McGoldrick, who is obviously now, well, played for Bournemouth and then now playing at Sheffield United. Yeah, I think it was very safe football. There wasn't a lot of coaching. There wasn't a lot of pattern. It was very, we'll outwork and we'll outfight the opposition and we'll try and get results. Whereas Eddie was different. He'd try and outthink, out-tact, out-manoeuvre the opposition with how we would play football and how we would defend against them.
Very good. And also, it was in an Ipswich newspaper up there. I could cut the East Anglian something or other. One of the articles said that it said Ipswich Town striker Brett Pittman admits he has still some work to do controlling his emotions after a poor result, but is not ready to to curb his vocal presence in the dressing room. So I'm glad to know that you still got that hunger, you know, like at Ipswich. And then, of course, it moved on to Portsmouth after that, Jeff.
Yeah, I mean, what was it like coming back to the South Coast to a big club, obviously, in Pompey? And they made you captain as well, didn't they?
Yeah, coming back was obviously coming to the South Coast was a massive attraction for me. I, I wanted to come and live back down here. My wife's family live in between Bournemouth and Portsmouth, so it was a big attraction for us. And obviously, if I couldn't sign for Bournemouth, then Portsmouth was the next best option.
Do you remember the pre-season friendly, Brett, that you played against Bournemouth for Portsmouth? I remember, like, me and a few mates not going to all the friendlies, but as soon as we saw we had Portsmouth away, oh, we got to go for Brett. Do you remember hearing, because obviously pre-season friendly, there's no like real big atmosphere. Do you remember hearing Bournemouth fans chanting your name during the game? Can you remember that?
Yeah, I do, yeah. And obviously it's lovely to hear. I felt really, really awkward playing that game, to be honest. Mm. Playing against my mate's team, a team that I played in, and probably, yeah, I just didn't really feel comfortable at all, really, with the whole game, and I was pleased when it was over, to be honest.
And you know, recently, this season, you've been back training at AFC Bournemouth with the under 21s, and it's something that you've been smiling about. But also, like someone on the live chat from Ben said, are you going to come back and teach our kids how to score? Now, what he might be referring to are some of the players that perhaps have not hit the ground running. And we also had this from Jim and Nina on one of the forums, who said, could he coach confidence and finishing to Dom Solanke? Because, and also, is Jake Scrimshaw the next Brett Pittman? Have you been following Dom Solanke, and sort of where do you think it's sort of going wrong for him at the moment?
Look, I've watched a lot of Bournemouth games. I've been to as many as I can, and he's only a young lad. I'm sure once he gets a couple of goals, I think, hopefully they'll start to flow. From what I've heard from the lads in training, he's very good, and he's a very, very hard-working lad. I'm sure strikers go through it.
Yeah,
it's tough. He's moved for a lot of money. He's a young lad. He's moved from Liverpool to Bournemouth. There's a lot that goes on, so it might just take him a little bit of time. But I'm sure, and I hope he'll be a good player for Bournemouth in the future.
Well, I was looking at your Instagram, as I said on earlier on messages, and there was a video, an Instagram story of your son scoring a peachy goal into the corner of the net. I mean, what a finish that was. Would you like him to follow in your footsteps?
Yeah, I think every dad would love their son to be a